Welcome to the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky of Break of Day Capital. I talk to leading experts to discuss a wide range of subjects to educate investors on best-in-class practices to build legacy wealth and positively impact communities. Let's jump in. Hey, everyone. We have launched the BODC Multifamily Impact Fund. Invest with a trusted operator with a track record of success. Our fund offers diversification, risk mitigation, tax benefits, and stringent acquisition criteria. If you'd like to learn more, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com.
Choosing the right insurance coverage for multifamily properties isn't that complicated, if you know who to talk to. At the Garzella Group, we're uniquely qualified to help you navigate the range of policy choices you have, and we're committed to saving you 30% in the process. We do intensive market research and have nationwide relationships, so we can find coverage other insurance brokers simply can't. We should talk. Go to quotenow.biz, and we'll start the conversation.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Investor Podcast. Today on the podcast, I have Brian Davis. Brian is a real estate investor, personal finance writer, and co-founder of Spark Rental with over two decades in the real estate and financial industries. He owns fractional shares in over 2,000 units and regularly contributes as a real estate and personal finance expert for Bigger Pockets, InMen, Best Ever Real Estate Tipster, and more. Thanks for joining us, Brian. Can you start by telling the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So, Gary, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. I fell into real estate by accident. I started working for a hard money lender right out of college who just happened to be buddies with my stepdad. I was watching all these guys make money hand over fist in real estate back in the mid-aughts. And, you know, I thought I could do this too, right? Like, so I went out and I put all my savings into rental properties and then totally fell flat on my face. You know, it happens to so many of us when we first get started, but I didn't get a mentor. I didn't get a coach. I didn't get a senior partner. It had that arrogance of youth. Oh, I'm gonna figure it out as I go. And, you know, and then, yeah, you know, 2008 hit and you all know what happened. So I pivoted, I went, and I'll tell you what actually sucks about that is that not only did my investments fall flat on their face, but I lost my day job too, right? Because no one's actually taking out hard money loans anymore. No one's flipping houses anymore. So had to find a new career. Went and I worked for an e-commerce company for a while who was servicing mom and pop landlords, mom and pop real estate investors. And, you know, the only reason I got that job is because I had direct experience, right? So, you know, as they say, a door closes, a window opens. That's how that stuff works out. So in 2016, a former colleague from that company, we went and launched Spark Rental. And our initial vision for the company was to make a one-stop shop property management software platform for mom and pop landlords. And it's funny, as entrepreneurs quickly discover, you know, what you think that your business is going to be often is not what the market tells you your business should be. So, you know, we did eventually launch a landlord software platform, but it took a lot longer than we thought it would. And there were a lot of twists and turns along the way. You know, our software developer ran off with our money, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we ended up building initially a business around education and teaching real estate investing. And then, you know, another pivot came when a lot of our course students and our audience members at large, you know, they kept coming to us and asking like, hey, can we just invest with you guys on some of the deals that you're investing in? And we kept saying no. You know, I had moved overseas by that point. My partner was no longer actively investing either. So we kept saying no to people. And then we were like, it feels a little out of alignment. You know, we're teaching something, but we're not actually doing it right now. So we decided, hey, what if we said yes? Like, what would that look like to say yes to people? So we partnered with a boots on the ground real estate investor here in the States and did a couple single family deals as just like joint ventures, opening them up for like, you know, fractional investing with some of our audience members where, you know, we're all just kind of going in on these together as like a learning exercise. And it was great. You know, we made perfectly fine returns and, you know, we had fun. We learned a lot together doing these. It was way too much work. Like it was way too much work. You know, so my partner, Denny, and I look at each other like, yeah, there's a reason no one else is doing this, right? Like it's too much work. We weren't actually charging for this. It was just a bonus that we were offering our course students. And it was around that time that I had started investing personally in real estate syndications. So I was like, well, you know, Denny, you know, going out and actually buying properties, that might be too much work. But what if we went in on like a real estate syndication with some of our course students and our audience members? So she said, well, you know, I don't know a ton about them, but why not? Let's try it. So we did a pilot deal. And that is how our co-investing club was born. That's become our main focus as a business, but it certainly didn't start out that way. I mean, you know, we've had a winding path over the years with the different services that we offer for real estate investors. You know, started out all services for, you know, mom and pop active investors, and we still offer all of those. But now our main focus is this co-investing club, where every month we go in on a different real estate deal together, different syndication deal together. We vet the deal together as a club. We bring in different sponsors, and any of our members who want to invest in that deal can do so with relatively small amounts, $5,000 in our case. And together, you know, collectively, we'll hit that $50,000, $100,000, $250,000 minimum investment. But it's a way for us to each invest small amounts and spread our money across a lot more deals, a lot more cities and states and sponsors and property types and all that stuff. It's fun. It's different.
I love it. I think when people get in, probably two things. You either got the one person that's like all in and invested in a lot of different deals and doesn't know how to do the due diligence, or the other person who analysis by paralysis, who is researching deals for years and years and years and doesn't do anything. So it's great to have a resource like what you provide, where you can do the due diligence together, provide, you know, your years of experience to help other people kind of get started in investing space. Kudos to you. Obviously, I think everyone has their own kind of winding journey. And I see so many that are like shiny object, you know, they jump on one thing, then the other. And that ability to focus is so important, because there's just plenty of ways to make money. But if you don't focus on any one thing, you can't get good at it. You also mentioned active versus passive. And I think, you know, people, you know, want to start doing their own deals, or, you know, the 1 to 4 units, and then soon realize this is a lot of freaking work. And, you know, the margins are so small. Investing with a team of experts can be a really good way to go, where you can enjoy the lifestyle and not have to deal with it. That's actually a really good segue, because you talk about living a financially independent lifestyle. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so I'm overseas. We've been overseas for 9 years now, my wife and me. We spent 4 years in Abu Dhabi, spent 4 years in Brasilia. We just moved to Lima, Peru last June. We'll be here for at least another year and some change. And one of the core themes that we return to again and again when we work with people, when we write about this stuff, when we in our podcast, we talk about how you don't need to be financially independent to live the same lifestyle that you would be living if you were financially independent. That's a hard concept for people to wrap their heads around, because when most people think of reaching financial independence and retiring early, you know, the whole FIRE movement, they think of like sitting on a beach and sipping pina coladas on a tropical island for the rest of their life, right? That's not reality. If you did reach financial independence, you could go do that for a month or two, and then you would be bored, right? You'd be bored to death. You know, you'd have the DTs, you'd have the shakes, you know, you'd feel like you have no purpose or meaning in your life. So what would you do? You go back to work. I've interviewed probably hundreds by now. I always just say dozens, but it's probably over 100 people now who have reached financial independence, usually through real estate, but sometimes, you know, in other means. And they all went back to work. I mean, because there's just only so long that you can sit around twiddling your thumbs, doing nothing if you retire young. So, you know, a lot of people, when they first hear that, they get really disappointed, right? They're like, oh, well, then what's the point of, you know, trying to have a really high savings rate and push really hard towards reaching financial independence at a young age? I want to reframe that for people and say, no, this is actually really good news. This means that you don't need nearly as much money as you thought you needed to get to the lifestyle that you really want, right? Because ultimately, that FI lifestyle, you know, it's not sitting on the beach, right? It's doing your ideal work, work that's very meaningful to you, you know, on your own schedule, right? Working your own hours, maybe geographically independent, right? You know, so wherever you choose to be, but you have total control over all that stuff. And it's work that you're super passionate about. Work, which in many cases may not pay as much as you currently earn, right? Or in some cases it might. I mean, and for some people, in which case, like, what are you doing? Like, quit now, right? And go do your ideal work now if it pays as much. If it doesn't pay as much, that's fine. You just need some extra income to cover the difference, right? Or you could just spend less. I mean, you could you cut your budget and just spend less now and switch to your dream work now as well. But if you don't want to spend less, then there's probably just a little bit of a shortfall, right? There's a gap between what you want to spend and what your dream work pays. And you just need some passive income to fill that gap. And that's going to be a lot less passive income than what you would need to totally replace your high octane, high stress 9-to-5 job. So you just need to get intentional about it. Figure out what's your ideal work. Figure out what does it pay. Figure out what kind of budget are you willing to live on every year. And if there is a gap there, you just need to fill it in with some passive income from investments.
You make it sound really easy. I think a lot of people have that kind of mental hurdle. How have you helped people take that leap of faith and do that? Because it's so foreign, you know, particularly to Americans. I think maybe more in other countries, it's, you know, they have so much more vacation and it's like, I get allergic with like after like a week, you know, being away, and it's like, I have to change that. So how have you helped people kind of overcome that hurdle?
Yeah, I mean, it starts with just getting really clear on what you actually want. Right. You know, and starting with that intentionality, you know, what is your ideal work? What does that look like? You know, how many hours a week are you going to be working? It's probably full time or close to it. And for most people, if it's work that you're really passionate about, it starts there. You know, where would you live geographically? What kind of hours do you want to work? What kind of work do you want to do? What kind of income can you potentially earn from this? It starts there. And those answers are going to be different for every single person, right? I mean, you know, we could get 100 people in this room and we'd get 100 different answers for those questions. So for me, I have no problem working 40, 50, 60 hours a week doing stuff that I love, but I also want the flexibility, right? I want to be able to work from anywhere in the world. I want to be able to travel all over the world. And we do a ton of travel. I want to be able to take things like what I call a red month, where I take a big red marker and cross through the entire calendar month and say, I'm not available this month. You know, I'm not available for conference calls or for interviews or for any of that stuff. You know, maybe I'll keep up with email, but that's it. And yeah, I want to be able to do that. And I have. My wife and daughter and I spent a month trekking around Patagonia in Argentina a year and some change ago. I love doing that stuff. So yeah, you just have to get clear on what all of that looks like for you, and then start piecing it together. And you know, I'll give you one other way to help get over some of these mental hurdles. When we first started Spark Rental back in 2016, you know, it didn't make any money, of course, right? It was a startup business. And more than half of our startup capital, we lost to that software developer who ran off with it. So it wasn't making any money at that time. You know, businesses take time to get off the ground. It takes money to get off the ground. So what did my partner and I do? We just took on side hustles to help extend that runway and to help, you know, cover any costs in the meantime. So in her case, she was a licensed realtor. She just picked up a little bit more work on the side as a realtor. In my case, I picked up some freelance writing. I've always loved writing. I went out and I got gigs as a freelance writer, and that helped supplement our income from Spark Rental as it started coming in. It also let my wife sleep at night knowing that there was an income floor. Right. And actually, I still do a little bit of freelance writing to this day because I enjoy it, because it makes my wife feel better. You know, she's like, well, you know, worst case scenario, you know, if your business implodes, you know, at least you can make money as a freelance writer. So it makes her feel better. So yeah, you can start piecing together these different streams of income, both active income and passive income. And sooner or later, it all comes together. You can live the lifestyle that you want to live, even if you're not yet financially independent.
Love it. I love it. I think. Yeah, so many people are afraid to make that leap, but more and more people are talking about it, which is great, because it's not one way to make a living and have a life. There's so many different options, and people took that leap of faith and, like you said, that intentionality and thinking to yourself, what does that look like? It doesn't have to be that, you know, 9-to-5 and you get your 2 weeks of vacation and that's that. And maybe you travel to a foreign country, you know, once every few years, but you're living the life and certainly working too, but it's not nearly out of reach as so many people think.
I'll just share one other thing that makes all of this way easier is finding a way to score free housing. That opens up so many more possibilities for you. I mean, first of all, if you are pursuing financial independence, maybe you want to retire early, if you can knock out your housing payment, I mean, that's typically 25 to 50% of your budget right there. So you can boost your savings rate immediately by 25 to 50% and really accelerate how quickly you build wealth, how quickly you build passive income. But it also, that might get you over the hump to switching to your dream work as well, right? If you can drop your spending budget, your annual spending budget by that amount that you have been spending on housing, that too, you know, maybe you don't need any passive income in order to bridge that gap. You know, maybe you can quit your day job now and go start doing your dream work if housing payments are not an issue. So, you know, you can look into things like house hacking, of course. You know, I mean, when I bought my first home, I rented out a room to a housemate. Her rent covered 3/4 of my mortgage payment. My partner, Denny, she's gotten more creative than that. She's brought in a foreign exchange student at one point. So for 4 years, she and her husband, they were empty nesters at the time. She's older than I am. And they weren't ready to sell their commercial or their big suburban house yet as empty nesters, but it was kind of expensive. And so they brought in a foreign exchange student. They hosted him for 4 years. And that stipend, the agency paid, covered their entire mortgage payment. Or close to it. I mean, it's like maybe $100 off or something. But yeah, so you can do these sorts of things. They've rented out storage and garage space before. I mean, they get creative with it. So house hacking is one option for that. Today, we don't pay for housing because my wife's job provides it for us. So, you know, that's another route that you can look at is, you know, employer provided housing. So you just want to get creative in looking at your largest structural expenses and finding ways to reduce them. I'll give you another very quick example of that is transportation is the second largest expense for most people. Cars are not only expensive in themselves, but they come with a lot of other ancillary expenses too, like insurance and maintenance and repairs and gas and parking and all these things. So the latest number from AAA is over $12,000 a year is the total cumulative cost of a car in the United States. To own a car, that's crazy expensive, right? So if you can get rid of a car, you know, if you're married, for example, can you go down to one car? Can you find a way to make that work? You can save a lot of money there. My wife and I dropped down to one car when we moved to Abu Dhabi. And when we moved from Abu Dhabi to Brasilia, we were moving within walking or biking distance of my wife's school. So we're like, well, maybe we can live without a car entirely. And we did. We haven't had a car since. So, I mean, again, it saves us a ton of money every year. It makes it a lot easier to build wealth quickly and live that financially independent lifestyle.
So I got a question. What is one of your hardest real estate lessons to date?
Oh, man. I'll give you two. One that is more obvious and one that's a little less obvious. So the obvious one, when I started buying rental properties, I didn't even know how to forecast cash flow. And it's embarrassing to say now, but you know, I'm running around thinking that cash flow is the rent minus the mortgage. Like I was not accounting for those irregular but inevitable expenses like vacancy rate, you know, like repairs and maintenance and property management. So your audience, they're all familiar with that stuff at this point. So I won't harp on that. I'll tell you another difficult lesson that I had is that lower income properties come with a lot of hidden expenses that don't show up on paper. Even when you do learn how to actually forecast expenses properly, you can still get into trouble because a lot of the expenses that come with lower end rental properties, they're hidden. So one example of that is property management. So property managers, of course, get paid as a percentage of the rents, right? You know, whether we're talking about the annual collection or the monthly collection or the fee for filling new units. But lower income properties, lower income rentals tend to come with more difficult and higher maintenance renters. So you're looking at more work for less money. So good property managers, high skill, high professionalism property managers just don't work with those properties, right? Because they don't have to. You end up with the dregs of property managers servicing those properties. And that took me a long time to figure out. It's like, oh, you know, why is it so hard to find a good property manager, someone who's actually professional and actually does all the things that they say they're going to do? Well, it's because those people weren't working with the kind of properties that I owned. So, yeah, I mean, that's one example, but there's a million of those examples. You know, crime is another one. So, I mean, I can't tell you how many air conditioning condenser units have just been totally ripped apart at my properties because people were going in trying to get the copper out, right? Or, you know, how many times I've had buildings broken into and appliances stolen and, you know, plumbing stolen, all that kind of stuff. And there's sometimes you get those secondary effects from that crime too, where it's not even where you are a direct victim of it. It's those good tenants of yours, the kind of people you actually want in the property, they move out because they don't like the crime. So crime is another one. Oh, turnover rates, you know, the turnover rates for these properties tend to be a lot higher. And when you're an income investor, that's where most of the work lies. And that's where most of the expense lies in owning these rental properties. It's in turnovers, right? You got to repaint the unit, maybe recarpet it. And you got to go in and advertise and show the unit and all these things. That's where all the work lies. That's where all the costs lies. When you don't have turnovers, it is more passive, right? You can sit back and just collect your rent and feel happy about it and whistle all the way to the bank. But the higher turnover rates is very costly. So when I talk to people about some of the expensive lessons that I've learned, that was definitely one of them, that it's a niche. Low income rental properties are a niche, and you need to learn that niche skill set beyond all the other skills that you need to learn as a real estate investor. And if you don't learn those skills, you're going to lose money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a lot more, certainly there's good money to be made there, but a lot more headaches. Great advice. Really appreciate you coming on, talking about your lifestyle and how anyone can achieve it. They put their mind to it. Where can listeners find out more about you and Spark Rental?
Yeah, come to sparkrental.com. Reach out to me personally if you want, brian@sparkrental.com. We're also on all the major social media platforms. We have a few Facebook groups that are pretty big. We've got one that's around 48,000 for active investors and around 8,000 for passive investors. But yeah, come check us out. We have an extremely generous refund program. We want people to come and join our investment club and attend a first meeting. And then if you decide that it's not for you, because this really is not for everybody, right? If it's not for you, then leave and we'll give you your money back. I mean, we want people to come and check it out and test drive it, you know, kick the tires, and then decide if it's for them, if they want this like fractional investing approach to their passive real estate investments. But it's a great thing to be able to spread small amounts across a lot of different deals and geographical markets and sponsors and all that stuff. Low stress, right? At the end of the year, it's just numbers on a page instead of that 100 grand that you have tied up in one property that you're chewing your nails about and worrying about. Maybe there's a capital call that you're worried about. Yeah, when you invest small amounts across a lot of deals, it's just numbers on a page at the end of the year.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Brian. This is Gary Lipsky signing off. I'll be back next week with another informative episode on the Real Estate Investor Podcast. To all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. And if you like this episode, please head over to iTunes or Stitcher and like, subscribe, and leave a review, as it will help us reach more people. And if you'd like to learn more about what we do at Break of Day Capital, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com and sign up for our newsletter and fill out our investor application. We'll talk to you next week.